Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Washington, D.C. is gearing up for next month's presidential inauguration. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 million people descending on the Capitol? No one knows, but it is sure to be big in many dimensions. Some may be watching the swearing-in of Barack Obama from 2 miles away on jumbotrons by the Lincoln Memorial. The logistical challenges alone look epic. And then there's the challenge of hitting the right note of celebration in tough economic times. This hour On Point, bracing for the inauguration. Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Linda Douglas, chief spokesperson for the Presidential Inaugural Committee. She was senior spokesman for the Obama campaign, longtime journalist with CBS and ABC, and even here at NPR as guest host of On Point. Linda, it's great to talk with you.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Great to hear your voice.
Great to have you here. Also with us from Washington is Nia Malika Henderson, White House reporter for Politico.com, who's been following the inaugural planning closely. Nia, welcome. Good to have you.
Hey there, Tom. Good to be here.
Linda, first to you, just on the numbers. I mean, we see all these gigantic numbers, even as high as 4 and 5 million. Is that nuts, or could it go that big?
That would be an awful lot of people to cram into Washington, D.C. There was a briefing that was held by the security officials, the Secret Service, federal officials, local officials last week, in which the Secret Service said that it is not their belief that there will be that many people. They've been analyzing plane travel, hotel reservations, trying to include in that the large number of buses that are expected to transport people here to Washington, D.C. from various parts of the country. But it was their belief that the numbers would not be quite that high, though we are bracing for a record crowd.
Nobody knows. The biggest, I think, on record, something like 1.25 million in 1964 for LBJ. And I'm reading here, we've got people way out in Maryland renting inaugural sleeper sofas for $250 a night or $65 a night cabins at the Harpers Ferry KOA campground in West Virginia. That's 66 miles from Washington. That's a long way. This thing could sprawl all over, Linda.
Well, it could. I mean, there, as you point out, there's a lot of entrepreneurial activity underway as people try to figure out in this tough economy how to make a few extra dollars from people who want to find a place to stay. There are still, according to Washington, D.C. officials, some hotel rooms scattered around the area. So I would suggest to people who are interested in coming to Washington, D.C. to scour, you know, all the websites that show hotel rooms. And Destination D.C. is the tourism bureau in Washington, D.C. They've been just doing an excellent job of trying to help people with that information. But you're right about the campgrounds out in West Virginia. I saw that report. Apparently they are unheated, no running water. Very hardy souls would have to be camping out. It's a little chilly in mid-January here in this part of the country, but people are determined to come.
Down to 7 degrees, famously, for Ronald Reagan's second inauguration. So cold they had to call it off outside and take it inside. No camping to be permitted on the mall in the nation's capital. But, Nia, what about it? Is there fear of such a huge crowd here that Washington, D.C. just becomes a kind of gridlock nightmare for, what, 3 or 4 days?
Gridlock nightmare. You know, that sounds like a lot of the things we deal with already in terms of traffic here. But I think there is some fear. I mean, if you're talking about 4 million people, and of course some of the security officials, like Linda said, have kind of backed off that number that initially came about because there was a sense that, you know, there would be double the amount of interest from previous inaugurations. But I think there is a little kind of trepidation, but also obviously excitement. But in talking to the mayor, I talked to the mayor last week, and he was saying that essentially kind of supply and demand will essentially kind of weed enough people out. And, of course, the inaugural committee has been mindful of this in trying to plan, for instance, this whistle-stop tour where folks in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, and Wilmington, Delaware, will get a kind of chance to see the president or the president-elect making his way to Washington. So I'm sure that'll kind of make people feel like they're a part of it and keep some folks at home.
This just announced yesterday that Barack Obama will and family will board the train in Philadelphia, pick up Joe Biden and his wife in Delaware, come on down with stops in Baltimore into Washington by train, by rail. Linda, give us the shape of the overall ceremony. This isn't just putting a hand on a Bible on one day, at noon on one day, and taking an oath. You've got several days here. What's the shape, the structure of the overall observance?
Well, we are not releasing the precise details of the events yet. Those will be coming out in the next several days. But as Neela says, we really have the goal of, and the president-elect and vice president-elect are determined to make this the most open, accessible, inclusive inauguration that we've had in history. And one of the ways that we will be doing that is to find novel ways to involve people who are not coming here to Washington, D.C., whether people decide spontaneously to have events in their home communities. We're going to be talking about some other ways in which we'll be involving people from outside of Washington. And the whistle stop begins on Saturday. So, and I'll explain that in just a second. Mm-hmm. So it's really a Saturday through Wednesday schedule. The whistle stop, and again, the details of each stop have not yet been released, mm-hmm. but it will begin in Philadelphia with the family, the Biden family. It will move on to Wilmington to pick up the Bidens. Mm. It will stop in Baltimore, and then it will end here in Washington, D.C. And the reason for those cities is that the theme of this inauguration is renewing America's promise, which is something that President-elect Obama and Vice President-elect Biden talked about throughout the campaign. And what that means is really opening opportunity for all, reestablishing America as a beacon of hope in the world. Philadelphia is the city where America's promise was realized, you know, the Founding Fathers, the Continental Congress, Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, all crafted there in Philadelphia. Baltimore is the scene of one of the great battles in American history where American forces fended off much greater firepower from the British in the War of 1812. Mm. The battle hymn of the Star-Spangled Banner, the national anthem, was inspired by that battle. So these are all very historic, patriotic sites. And we think this is going to be a very exciting way to involve people who don't want to come to Washington.
Are we going to see that back of the train waving sort of Teddy Roosevelt style in 2008? Is that part of the picture?
That is not clear yet. It is the shape of this train trip and what happens on the train trip and what the events are going to be like when he gets there are all still being hammered out. But it will be a memorable whistle stop. There's no question about it.
Now you've got a welcome event then on Sunday, as you say, open to the public. On Monday, it happens to be Martin Luther King Day. So you've got the kind of back-to-back of this historic African-American being sworn in the day after Martin Luther King Day, the president-elect and vice president-elect and their families in some kind of service in Washington on that day. Noon on January 20th, Inauguration Day, the swearing in. And what about the mall on that day? Nia, Is it how much is open? How much is expected to be filled in? Jumbotrons, like all the way down to Old Abe sitting in his memorial?
Quite possibly. I mean, they're opening up the entire length of the mall for the first time. And, you know, I think part of this whole idea of the 4 million figure, that's where it came from, this idea that essentially 4 million people can fit into that length.
If you filled it wall to wall.
If you filled it wall to wall, and we would be very warm, you know, all there together on that cold day. I mean, it could possibly happen. Again, I think folks are backing off of these mm-hmm. numbers of 4 million. But yes, I mean, it could very possibly happen.
And what about the swearing in itself? I mean, here's where the message really gets sent, renewing America's promise, the formal theme here. But Barack Obama, Linda, does have a challenge here in that he's taking office in a very, very tough time for the country. What do you know? What do you expect from his statement on that day?
Well, of course, the inaugural address is something that is being crafted by the president-elect and his team of excellent speechwriters. President-elect Obama is himself a very accomplished writer. He's written two best-selling books. The power of his speeches was really one of the great features of his presidential campaign. But this is going to be, no doubt, a message of unity. that is the core of the message that he began delivering at the 2004 convention and was the theme throughout his presidential campaign. It is ending business as usual here in Washington. It is rising above the partisan gridlock that has paralyzed our politics to the point where the government has been less able to do for the American people what they need done for them right now. It is a message that we're all one people. This is an inauguration that is going to celebrate that message, a message of coming together, celebrating our common values and our shared hopes and aspirations. This is the message of these inaugural events as we try to include as many people as possible.
And Linda,
I'm sure you'll be hearing that kind of message coming from
you. I'm sure we will. We just got a minute before the record, and I'm going to have to let you go. But then come the balls, and we've got a million of them here. The All-American Ball, the American Indian Ball, the Black Tie and Boots Ball, and the MTV Be the Change inaugural ball, and right on. How do you have all that partying and not look out of step with tough, tough recession times, Linda?
Well, I mean, I think that, there is more to celebrate here than just the election of a new president. I mean, this is a celebration of our common values. This is a celebration of big change coming. It's a celebration of how strong we are when we're unified and stand together. And when we stand together, we have the strength to face these challenges. So it's really a celebration of the American spirit. And many of these events are popping up spontaneously from Americans all around the country who just want to say that they feel a lot of hope and a lot of optimism as the president and vice president are sworn in.
Linda Douglas, chief spokesperson for the Presidential Inaugural Committee, joining us from Washington. Linda, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Nia Malika Henderson with Politico.com. Please stand by. We've got a lot to look at here. Who's going to pay for all this? Who's going to be there? We're going to hear from Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton of Washington, D.C. We'll look at security. We'll look at Earl Stafford, who's put up $1 million to bring the poor to the inaugural. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Nia Malika Henderson joins us from Washington, D.C., White House reporter for Politico.com. Nia, what about this issue of who's paying and how? A lot of money is required to put this on. Where's it coming from?
Indeed. They released some figures on Friday, and it shows that they have raised so far about $10 million, all from private donors, folks like Halle Berry, a bunch of folks from the Soros family, Samuel L. Jackson, Sharon Stone, lots of famous people, but then just lots of wealthy people who want to donate. And, of course, they get tickets to some of the official inaugural ball. So it's all on private donations. They have set spending caps this year where an individual can only donate $50,000. They're not accepting any money from corporations or lobbyists or unions, but it is all privately funded.
George Bush raised $42.8 million for his 2005 swearing-in. So far it's not on that scale. Do they expect it to be, or is this just going to be less expensive?
You know, if the past is any prologue, I think Barack Obama definitely has, kind of the power and the kind of the grassroots contacts to raise that much money. They are kind of talking about scaling back, what that actually looks like financially in these tough times. We're not really sure. There isn't, a budget. I talked to some of those transition folks and inaugural folks, and they said that, there is no budget just as of yet. But, I mean, they're on a pretty good pace to match that.
One can imagine that Washington, D.C. might be happy for the stimulus of a big, all-out inauguration ceremony and celebration around it. Nia, please stand by. We have joining us right now from Washington, Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, Democratic Congresswoman for the District of Columbia in her ninth term there. Congresswoman, thanks very much for being here.
Hello. It's my pleasure.
It's great to have you. And we know that people are excited about this in Washington. You no doubt are, too. But at the same time, you've been warning, watch out. This could be a wave that swamps us.
Well, yeah. We'd like something of the swamp because, as you just said, with this recession, we're going to experience shortfalls in tourism. This is a major international tourism destination, but we want to do it right. We're very practiced at doing it. After all, who else does inaugurations?
Right.
We're very good at handling large crowds, but I'm native Washingtonian. I've been in the Congress for 18 years, and so I have written to, indeed met with, the executive director of the Presidential Inauguration Committee to make sure that we were all on the same page. That page is throw out the book, write a new book.
Right, and do it quick. You write in your letter, you say, watch out, it's not the mall's capacity. Of course, it can hold millions, but it's the transportation, getting access to the mall, crowd comfort and mobility. You said, you know, a lot of people coming here may never have been to an inauguration or even to Washington before. They may not know they'll have to walk blocks, even miles, to get on to that mall, potentially. What's the picture that's got you worried, and are you confident that it's going to be handled?
Well, the picture that's got me worried is that the crowd is unlike any crowd we've seen before. They're not the supporters of the president that are used to coming, because the president is a breakthrough president, you can expect a breakthrough crowd.
Sure.
Because many of them have not been to Washington, they will not be aware that while the trains run on time, trains only carry so many people. And so I have been at pains to say to people when they talk about how many people the mall will hold, that is almost beside the point. The point is, how will they get there? And our experience, for example, on July 4th, just to take an annual celebration we're all very used to,
mm-hmm.
is that people often have to walk two or three subway stops to get on a train. And, of course, the security will keep you from just rushing into the metro if it's already crowded.
Subway, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm particularly concerned about the elderly. People, you know, the I never thought I'd live to see people.
Right, of course. We got the Tuskegee Airmen coming in. I guess they'll have pride of place, but you could have people with canes and walkers in that crowd really want to see it, but it could be tough.
It will be tough, and I think it best for them not to come. I am very pleased that this morning the president, the inauguration committee has announced that the president will take the Lincoln route to the inauguration, because I believe that will satisfy many of the crowds, and then will indeed be able to get a lot closer than they will get in Washington. They won't get anywhere close to.
You mean the whistle stop, the train trip, and maybe crowds along the tracks as he heads in?
Yes. Mm-hmm. People should be encouraged to go where the train stops, and that will relieve some of the crowds. Now, you know, here I'm making a statement against interest. I want as many of them to come, and I believe that, like it or not, with or without tickets, they're going to come. So I don't think that I'm deterring people from coming by saying that those who come should not have small children, should not be elderly. I've asked for the churches to be opened. I have asked for...
To get warm, to get access to a bathroom, just to sit down somewhere.
Indeed, I'm trying to open some government buildings, mm-hmm. and I'm having some success as rest stops. I've also asked that there be indoor and outdoor Obama inauguration swearing-in sites near the mall, where people can have a sense of participation at mm-hmm. least as much as they would have by being at the far end of the mall looking at a jumbotron.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we've got to think about making the inauguration the joyous occasion that people imagine it will be, by being as proactive as possible, by taking steps to make sure people enjoy it according to their own choices and conditions. So the Obama swearing-in sites, for example, could be outdoor sites.
A stadium, or you name it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be large indoor sites. I think even outdoor sites as far away as Maryland, because people who are going to try to get into the District of Columbia that day are going to be terribly disappointed. Now, I must say, when I met with Emmett Bellevue of the Inauguration Committee,
mm-hmm.
I was meeting with the right person, because this is the guy who put on the 100,000-person rallies for Barack Obama. So he's not exactly a stranger to crowds, although all of us are strangers to crowds of this size in this space with this mode of transportation. So I was very, very confident, frankly, and relieved after meeting with him, that he had a good fix on this. Indeed, I met with him with the sergeant at arms of the House, who of course controls the area around
immediately
here.
Around the Capitol. Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. and whom I've worked with very closely. And we were both pleased that we were not talking to the uninitiated here or to somebody who didn't understand that they're going to have to do something very different.
It may be something very different indeed. Congresswoman and Nia Malika Henderson, we've got a lot of listeners who want to join us. Let me turn to a few, if I may. In Des Moines, Iowa, Karen, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just want to say I will be in Washington in my heart and my head, and I will be gathered with a group of friends, some of whom are taking the day off of work. Unfortunately or fortunately, we all happen to be old white women, and we will be wearing the buttons that we had made in the springtime after there were some question across the nation about whether white people would support a black president. We've been working for this black president, and we will be proudly wearing our Another Old White Woman for Obama button.
But you say you'll be there in your heart and head. In other words, you won't be standing there. You'll be in Iowa looking on, Karen.
We'll be having ready access to the bathroom and the popcorn and the soup and the rolls.
The works.
We're going to live the day. Thank you so much.
We got it. Thank you, Karen. Let's get one from
I welcome this hearty. this hearty supporter. And it's not age. It's whether or not you're used to walking, whether or not you're used to the cold. And if you are, come on.
We've got a call from cold country here. Mark in Putney, Vermont. You're on the air, Mark.
Thank you. Yes, it's our ski day on Tuesday, which is election day. And, of course, we're not driving 10 hours to D.C., but I have asked that the lodge, I work at a K-8 day school in Putney, and I've asked the lodge and the ski place that they put in televisions so we can stop skiing, watch the inauguration, which, of course, is the equivalent of man walking on the moon and other great moments in American history.
So you'll be up on the mountainside with the TV on and then watching from there. That's a high vantage point.
Absolutely. So we'll be thinking of all those in D.C. while we're cutting some slopes, good runs on the slopes.
That's great. And let's get one from Lansing, Michigan. Frank, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a proposal. We should make January 20 a national holiday for everyone. Everyone should be off. No work. And all look at TV and have parties everywhere.
Well, of course, Martin Luther King Day is just the day before, so there will be a travel holiday. Congresswoman, that may actually encourage people to drive there because they will have that day off, many people.
Well, it's going to encourage more people to come than otherwise, looking to come. In other words, an already very large crowd is going to be larger precisely because there is a holiday. And there isn't. We got to understand that this is an unknowable number. In this city, we know how to calculate how many people are coming. But because so many people will drive and stay with their cousin whom they haven't seen for 20 years, there will be no way to know what the number is. Therefore, you have to prepare for the unforeseen and the unknowable. That's why we try to do things we've never done before here and why I think we will be successful. But I must say that call about, looking at it so you can really see it from the last couple of callers is very important. Some people who had tickets, and I've had discussions about how to make sure people have tickets to get through the crowds, and I think that those plans are going to be okay. But some people who had tickets got through the crowds at the last inauguration where there were only 300,000 people, got through security only after the swearing-in was over.
Standing in line to get – we'll talk about security after a break here. But, Neil, what about tickets? What are tickets required for to get into what area? Just that front lawn of the Capitol building? And who's getting tickets, Neil?
Who's getting tickets? Well, folks who are donating are certainly getting tickets, but they've got about 240,000 tickets that they've printed up. Folks like the Tuskegee Airmen, they're obviously getting tickets for – there's a section where about 30,000 people will sit that it's closer to the viewing of the
These were the black World War II pilots specially invited, among others, yes?
Exactly, exactly. But, at the kind of state level, folks are figuring that out now. I was reading
Wait. Who's getting tickets? And this is what's important to know.
Yeah.
The tickets are really being distributed by members of the House and Senate, that's why our phones have been virtually shut down the day after, and people are having to do those tickets by lotteries. Yes, there will always be some people who are close to the president, but most of the tickets to the inauguration will be standing room only tickets close to where the swearing in, if you can get there, and if you can get one of the less than 200 tickets allotted to every House member, about twice that allotted to every Senate member, and all have been swamped.
It must have been incredible demand for those, Nia.
Yes, incredible demand. And like Eleanor Holmes Norton said, they're kind of doing lotteries. I was reading somewhere where in Connecticut they're kind of, you know, doing lotteries and drawings for those tickets. And they've just been swamped with calls, you know, thousands of people kind of flooding their lawmakers' offices to get these tickets. And they're rare, 240,000 altogether. And in terms of what I was talking about in terms of, you know, people who donate are going to get, you know, kind of tickets to some of the official balls and ceremonies and things like that. But Ms. Norton is right that these 240,000s are really rare.
Let's go to Wendy calling from Canaan, New York. Hi, Wendy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm organizing a bus to come to D.C. for the inauguration. We've had buses that have come for all the big peace marches,
yeah.
And I know how difficult it can be to get on the train. I'm suggesting that they organize a way for the buses to come into the city and line up on Constitution or somewhere, because my experience with the peace marches, it was hard enough to get to the buses out in the outer belt, but I don't think we'll be able to get back to our buses.
Do you have a place to sleep, Wendy? Where do you plan to stay?
We come on the bus. We leave here about 11 o'clock at night. We ride all night. We march and participate all day, get back on the bus at 6 o'clock at night, and get home at 1 in the morning. And we've been there for every march since before the war. We were marching against the war before it started.
Well, Wendy, thanks very much for calling. Good luck getting into town on that day. Congresswoman,
well, could I say something?
Yes, please.
Wendy sounds like she knows what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. Let me say to Wendy and everybody else, that will be one of the great problems. She will have a bus. We have 10,000 buses. We're trying to get them as close to the mall as possible. There will be long walks from the mall. There will be no buses along Constitution Avenue. There will be no buses anywhere near the event. And remember, Tom, there is going to be a parade right after, and there are no tickets there. So one of the things we have to think about is the merging of the people who've come for the swearing-in, and people said, oh, well, I don't have a ticket for that. I'll go to the parade. Of course, most people who come for the swearing-in won't have a ticket, and you have the merging of two large crowds.
Boy, that is going to be something. Congresswoman, what do you expect this inauguration to mean to you? You know the politics. You know the history. And you're looking forward to the day like most of the country. What do you expect to be feeling on that day?
Well, for us in the district, it's very special. First of all, we love inaugurations. We are the inauguration city. And, of course, this was a big Obama town. And so there's kind of a double feeling. It's the man we wanted to be president. And then, of course, it's interesting. You would think that Washingtonians would especially want to go. I'm a third-generation Washingtonian, so these are perhaps old hat to me, but not this one. But I tell you, as you speak to people, first, my phones were shut down. I have to tell you, they shut down my server the day after.
Asking for tickets, that
yeah,
wave.
And mm-hmm. they shut down. I had to put something special on my phone saying, the joke around Washington is that Eleanor says she's the only member of Congress that has a do not call me list. It's just the opposite. But I think in Washington, people who understand the weather on the 20th, what it typically is, who
and what is that? It can be very cold, we know.
It can be quite cold. This should be a moderate climate part of the country. It can be just as cold as it is anywhere else, and often is. When I sit out there, you know, members of Congress go, I often ask myself, what am I doing here? It's cold, yet it only lasts an hour. I want to encourage people to come. I want to, because there's going to be great joy. I just want them to be knowledgeable. They need to be people who don't mind walking, who won't be disappointed by looking at jumbotrons. Because don't worry, everybody will be looking at jumbotrons, including those in the sites near where the swearing-in will occur.
Right.
That's how you see best.
Even on the mall, Representative Eleanor Holmes Norton, representing the District of Columbia in the U.S. Congress. Thank you very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Good luck on Inauguration Day. Nia Malika Henderson, please stick with us. We're talking about next month's presidential inauguration. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about next month's presidential inauguration and the epic event shaping up in Washington, D.C. 1.25 million or so, the biggest crowd ever in 1964 for the inauguration of Lyndon Baines Johnson. Numbers as high as 5 million have circulated about the inauguration next month. Could be less than that. I mean, that would be huge. Someone has said the biggest human gathering in North American history. But even if it's just one plus, that's a lot of people. And if it gets up towards two, watch out. Nia Malika Henderson joins us. She's White House reporter for Politico.com. Let's get a couple of callers here. David in Columbia, South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have a couple people that I, friends of mine, who work in the security up in the D.C. area in different agencies, and I myself have worked overseas in security. And when you start talking about a million or more people are going to be in that area, that gets really frightening to me in terms of what could possibly happen. And then you even talk about what could happen outside that. I pray to God that nothing does happen, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I'm going to take my comments off the air, but, you know, could they even describe just a little bit the generalities of what's going on without getting into specifics?
Sure, the security details. We will do it, David. And let me get one more call here first from Asheville, North Carolina. Marcus, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you know, with the holiday season and the pushing and shoving and the trampling that goes on and people rushing into department stores.
You're thinking Walmart, and that's sad. It, death there, just getting into a store.
Yeah, I know. That's awful. Mm-hmm. What precautions are going to be taken so that won't happen or any fights are going to break out?
Okay, let's look at that as well. Nia's standby joining us now, also from Washington, is Kevin Johnson. He covers national law enforcement for USA Today. Kevin, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You hear our listeners calling in with questions about security, crowd control. Outline for us, if you would, Kevin, what kind of security planning and staffing is in the works here?
Well, I think the callers are asking some questions that a lot of people have, given the crowd size. Crowd sizes that have followed Mr. Obama around the country during the primary. And that was a primary issue last week when the Secret Service and other law enforcement groups held a briefing for us. And at that point in time, they were not providing an exact crowd estimate, and I don't think anybody can at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But the numbers that have been bandied about, 4 to 5 million, the Secret Service said that they had no evidence to support crowds that high.
Okay.
Nevertheless, the crowds that are expected to break previous records, which, as you pointed out earlier, are the 1.2 million people who attended the Lyndon Johnson inaugural. So those are the major concerns, the crowd sizes and how those crowds will react when brought together.
Now, you report that there will be 58 federal, state, and local security agencies, including 5,000 troops from the Pentagon and U.S. military, 96 police agencies across the country, sending 4,000 extra officers to help secure the event. I mean, we've got big numbers of organizations and of people on the security side, Kevin.
Right. Some of those numbers represent people who will just be part of the logistical concern and just moving people around and situating people in a way that doesn't provoke confrontation. But the numbers you also quote are only part of the group that would be assembled here. Again, the Secret Service was not releasing the full contingent of people who will be here, either in a uniform or undercover capacity.
You also quote Washington, D.C. police saying that the entire intelligence community will be working in preparation and on those days.
Yes, he mentioned that Chief Burke was talking about how the intelligence community works during these major events, and the inaugural, as has been the case in the past, is considered a national special security event, meaning that the federal government steps in and oversees the operation of the event, and that goes from security to logistics. So I think what you're seeing is an all-out effort, as has occurred in the past, to make sure it's a secure event.
On election night at Grant Park in Chicago, there were those big sheaths of bulletproof glass on both sides of that stage, and a very big crowd there as well, though not this kind of numbers. Are there special precautions expected given the crowd size and the history-making angle here?
Well, I think they're trying to take precautions to avoid any kind of problem, and that's the reason that you saw the sheaths of glass. In speaking to police officials in Chicago, they were a bit concerned about the large buildings that loomed over the area and a vantage point somebody might have to the park. And I think the same concerns are true in Washington. The Secret Service has acknowledged that, that is something that they're going to be watching closely, is the crowd size and the reaction of the crowd. But there's, the issue of race also enters into this. And the Secret Service, again, acknowledges that that's one additional factor to consider in their planning for the security of this event.
Yep.
And that means monitoring intelligence from hate groups that may not have been at the top of law enforcement's list with the Bush inaugurals or other presidential inaugurals.
Nia, a big challenge on the security front, both from old-fashioned security to crowd control if the crowds get anywhere near the numbers being talked about here.
Yes,
indeed. A real big security, kind of nightmare, and certainly is going to require lots of planning. But I do think, kind of that the spirit of this event, and the spirit of all of these events mm-hmm. is a kind of coming together, and one would hope that the crowd kind of falls in line with that. People are coming, bringing their kids, and it's a kind of, had to be their moment for everybody. So I think, in keeping with that, one hopes that'll be the spirit of the day.
Kevin Johnson with USA Today, thanks very much. You're reporting on the security front here.
Sure, thank you.
Let's go to Michael in Savannah, Georgia. Michael, you're on the air.
I was in Washington a few times for 4th of July celebrations, and the metro system simply put up big 55-gallon drums you could throw your money in rather than try to use the fare card machines. I'm wondering if there's any plans yet for how to get people on to the metro.
Well, let's ask. What do you know, Nia?
Yeah, I bet there are. I mean, everybody's looking at that. I mean, one of the things about the subway system here or the metro system here is I think it can hold about 120 or move about 120,000 folks an hour. And if you're talking about 4 million, 5 million people, there is going to be an issue of you might be able to get them there and fit them on the mall, but how are you going to get them out? I'm sure they're looking at all sorts of angles to speed that up, because the metro system here essentially runs on two tracks. And if something happens, then it could, kind of delay and derail the whole day. So I'm sure they're looking at all kind of aspects of that to speed things up.
And let's get another from Norwich, Connecticut. Jenna, you're on the air.
Good day, Tom.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that my grandfather was asked by the state of Maryland to sign the official document that came for the electoral votes yesterday in Annapolis. And he was given two tickets to the inaugural, and he didn't know at the time that I wanted to go. And due to his health, he gave them to a friend. So my girlfriends and I are just saying gung-ho, we're going in, we're staying with friends in Maryland and going to take the metro. And that was my question.
You're going anyway without tickets.
I'm going in without tickets. I just want to be in the hoopla and in the enjoyment. I have two biracial children. I'm bringing my 16-year-old with me. And
yeah.
It's just something that, just part of history. And I just want to be in the happiness and the aura of it.
We got it. Nia, advice for Jenna. She's just plowing in there.
Start early. I mean, get there early. There's going to be a glut. I mean, in talking to folks here, I mean, we're trying to figure out logistically where we're going to be, where we're going to be able to get during the day. So my advice to you is just to start out early, show up as early as you can. I think some of the grounds open at about 7 a.m. So, start out early. And I would say, are you going to drive in, or what are you going to?
Jenna may be on the road already.
Right. She probably is.
Good. Jenna, thanks for calling. We've got a very special guest with us right now from Centerville, Virginia. We're joined by Earl Stafford. He's founder of the Virginia-based Universal Systems and Technology. You may have heard his story. He is the guy who reserved $1 million worth of rooms at Washington, D.C.'s JW Marriott Hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue that he will offer. He has offered at no charge to poor, homeless, disadvantaged veterans to be part of the inaugural celebration. It's taken over, as I understand it, the entire hotel. Mr. Stafford, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
We're well and really impressed with the story of what you've rolled out here. What exactly are you doing?
Well, what we're doing through a foundation that my family has established is that we wanted to make this historic event accessible to those who otherwise wouldn't have an opportunity to participate. And so we want to reach out to those who we call underserved in the country, the homeless, those who are chronically unemployed, even those who are terminally ill, our veterans, our soldiers who have come back wounded, and to give them an opportunity to participate.
Now, this just blew me away when I first heard it. And you reserved these rooms weeks ago now. How did you get the bee in your bonnet, Mr. Stafford, to do this?
Well, I will tell you, I tell people, I was inspired to do this. We're a Christian family. And I was inspired as early as last March to do something. I didn't know it would reach this magnitude. I had actually reserved the presidential suite at another hotel in June or July of this year, and my intent was to get some disadvantaged people socially and economically and to bring them in and watch the parade and do something nice and move on. And the last Sunday in October, there was an article in the Washington Post that had this package from the Marriott, and I knew right then that that's what I was supposed to do.
So how many rooms, how many people are you likely to put up there?
Well, the package includes two presidential suites, two vice presidential suites. It involves 300 rooms. It involves a food credit to providing food, and then the terrace, the 12-floor terrace, which overlooks Pennsylvania Avenue, to view the parade.
So you have 300-plus rooms full of people on your tab, and how are you finding the guests for your People's Inaugural Project? How are you figuring out who to invite to use
well,
those rooms?
What's happening that the project involves much more than just the rooms. We have a 1,000-person prayer breakfast, a 1,000-person Martin Luther King luncheon, then we have a 1,000-person inaugural ball, and we're putting on a youth inaugural ball for those 18 and under. And what we're doing, there's a coalition that we've established with other organizations, and we're reaching out to other social organizations and hospitals that can identify these individuals. So we're working closely with the National Urban League and others to identify these individuals throughout the country.
And military veterans as well?
Military veterans, what we want to do is to have a purple event, if you will. And our intent is to bring together those who might have money in their bank account with those who only have pennies in their pocket. We want to say thank you to these our war veterans and those who have been injured, and just a cross mix of America. This is about the people.
You're also providing gowns and tuxedos and hairstylists and makeup for folks here.
It has expanded to that, and the more people hear about this, the more people want to volunteer and to be a part of this. And so we're getting the National Urban League is accepting gowns and tuxedos. There are hairstylists and cosmetic people that want to come in and to play a role. We are not overwhelmed, but there are many people who are making contributions who want to be a part of this. This is about the people.
You're a 60-year-old Air Force retiree, made your fortune with a military technology company. What is it? Is it military software?
We do interactive training. We develop and we manufacture some simulation equipment for the federal government.
What do you expect from this next presidency that you're celebrating in such an open-handed style here, Mr. Stafford?
Well, first of all, let me say that this was all done before the election. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what the outcome was, we were going to do something for the people. But there's an air of hope and excitement, at least in the Washington area. And I think people are excited about the hope that although we're in difficult times right now, there's an expectation that we're going to work together, we're going going to come together as a country, and things will get better.
Nia, are they still talking about Earl Stafford's gesture in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was actually at my hairdresser a couple of days ago, and she wants to help out. So, yes, people are talking about it for sure, and I think it's an inspiration to a lot of folks.
Well, Mr. Stafford, thank you very much for the gesture. It's quite a grand one, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
Earl Stafford, founder of Universal Systems and Technology, joining us there from Centerville, Virginia. He has put down $1 million plus to reserve the entire Marriott on Pennsylvania Avenue for this People's Inaugural Project. Nia, are you going to be covering this right up until right through Inauguration Day?
Yeah, we are trying to kind of figure out logistically where we're going to be throughout the day. But, you know, there is going to be a crush of reporters there covering it, you know, from now and until then. So, yeah, we're gearing up now.
Even for reporters, getting around in these days could present a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. Are we going to kind of be in the mix there, you know, just strategically, where are we going to be? I know folks are going to kind of, you know, there's a tradition of, well, at least Carter, he kind of walked along Pennsylvania Avenue and shook hands, and some reporters would kind of be along there to talk to the people who got to meet the president. So, yeah, this is going to be covered just immensely. I mean, you talk about the crowds of 4 million, half of those might be reporters.
that would be, I didn't know there were that many left, given what's going on. Nia Malika Henderson with Politico.com, thank you very much for joining us and filling us in today. Thanks a lot. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, Tanya Rally, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby. With help from Carrie Schutpeltz and Michelle Tran. Our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.